From Radio Sausalito in beautiful Sausalito, California, I'm Mitchell Field, and you are on the field trip. Welcome to The Field Trip, a few minutes of conversation each week with some of the most interesting people in the Bay Area and Marin County. I talk to artists and writers, actors, directors, musicians, some of the people who make the Bay Area a fun and a fabulous place to live. So let's get right to it. Last week on The Field Trip, I had the pleasure of interviewing the world-renowned drummer, Mr. Harold Jones. I had so much fun talking to him that I just let the tape run, and today I'm going to present the second part of my interview with Harold Jones, and I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. Thanks. Let me ask you this about Count Basie. I know that in the early days when you were with Count Basie, you used to travel by what you'd call Air Greyhound. That was the Greyhound bus, right?
Yes.
And I understand that everybody had their seat, and you sat four rows back behind the driver, and Basie sat opposite you in the third row. Is that right?
Yes, yes. And they've figured it out over the years that the most comfortable seats in a bus were between the two wheels, you know? So consequently, Basie got to pick out his seat first, and he did not want to be in the first row. Yeah, he didn't want to be up front. And he was sat back in that third row, so if anybody was looking for whoever Count Basie was on the bus, they wouldn't really see him. And believe me, the guy sat in front of him was Marshall Royal, and he did a very good impression of Basie. You could tell which fans knew Basie and which ones didn't. Yeah, because he'd get off that way. But in the middle of the bus, that's where the lead players had their seats, and the drummer, but Freddie Green liked the back of the bus, and that's what they called the lounge, and that's where they rolled the dice back there and played 4, 5, 6, and that's where they played cards. So Freddie, he just stayed back there. His seat was back in the back of the bus, him and the bass player, which was Dewey the whole time, 5 years. But the middle of the bus was lead trumpet, lead trombone, lead sax, and then, of course, there was Basie and me. Yeah, that's why it was a tight-knit little group right in there. Consequently, I've been as young as I was, I could only learn stuff.
You're reputed to be a guy who's learning stuff all the time.
Well, I admit I'm learning it right now. You are right, Mitchell. Yeah, say if you live out there long enough and it doesn't kill you, you'll learn stuff.
Well, listen, in 1972, you decided to leave the Basie Band to come to California and be a studio musician. Why did you make that decision?
That was probably one of my first biggest mistakes. because what happened was when I went out there to Hollywood, I had 2, 3, 4, 5 drummers that were good friends and buddies. They were all making good gobs of money in 6 figures and doing the TV and the movie jingles and this and that. And at that time, I was the top paid guy in Basie's band, and it could have been, I don't know, I could have been $600.
Wow.
For the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you sent money home. Yeah, but we were paying for hotel rooms. Anyway, it was kind of somewhat of a financial thing, and I didn't realize, man, I was on top of the rainbow, man, at the time. And consequently, about every other year after that, when they were changing drummers again, I'd go in for a stint until they found somebody. Yeah, but you know what? My first gig that came up, man, out in Hollywood, too, was with Ella Fitzgerald. And that was funny because the first gig she did when I joined her was playing up in San Francisco at the Circle Star Theater with the Basie Band. Can you believe it? I'm just putting all that together myself. But that was true. That was what happened. So it was a mistake. But then it turned out financially okay, and now musically it's turned out financially. If I could circle the block, I would.
Well, you know, if times ever got hard, I know you that you could have gone on the road teaching the yo-yo, because I know that you were the yo-yo champion of Indiana when you were 13 years old. Isn't that right?
That's right, man. That shows you. We had nothing else to do in Indiana much. I mean, the kids played outside, and we had balls and bats and ran and whatnot and played with yo-yos. Yeah.
So you weren't from a wealthy family or anything?
No. No, my father was a janitor, and a janitor, I think he had about 3 different jobs that he did. Because nobody knows, between me and my brother and my mom, we would do most of the work, you know. He did heavy stuff, but anyhow, I do the windows or whatever, something like that. And so, anyhow, no, it was not a wealthy family, man. And when I'd complain, that's when he'd tell me, well, that's why I got you doing it, so you won't want to do this when you get to be my age. And boy, that stayed right with me.
Well, I know that you're one of the few musicians who has been lucky enough never to have had a day job.
Well, you're right. Yeah. Yeah. And I thank my music teachers, and going right back to my beginning, too. But I mean, I had music teachers that taught me how to read before I took any kind of a so-called solo. And I mean, I was in the vaudeville pit, my first teacher, and they had me playing xylophone, the temple blocks, the wood block, and cowbell, and all of the things. They weren't called gimmicks then, you know, part of the music.
So yeah. You were really a percussionist before you were a drummer?
Yes, yes, I was. And as a matter of fact, at the American Conservatory of Music, they would not allow the drum set to be used for an exam piece. And when I asked them why, they said, well, it was considered, like I'd say, called a bastard instrument. It had no music written for it. There had been nothing that had preceded a drum set that had been written in any kind of classical music.
I didn't know that.
See there? And so I wrote a piece for a drum set. A drum set for a tambourine and for a triangle player. Yeah. And it passed as a proper exam piece, and kids in Chicago could come in and play that piece and either get scholarships or get accepted into the school on that piece.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, man. So that was some, when I was in the trenches helping to teach and trying to bring up new kids, well, I was still trying to grow up myself.
Is it true that you got yourself a silver sparkle drum set to match Ella Fitzgerald's sparkly dress when you played for her?
Man, if you stop to think about it, silver sparkle drum sets on the stage, if she comes out in a red, blue, green, or orange dress and they reflect off the drums, it's going to reflect with her. Absolutely, that's what I was doing, just to match whatever dress she would wear. Because, you know, back then they had some other wild colors. I had one called burnt orange, and boy, I remember Sarah Vaughan had come out in a green dress. I think she screamed one time. Yeah, she would pay attention to that. Yeah, but no, I've stayed silver sparkle for that very reason, that no matter what color dress that the lady comes out in, should be matched.
Well, there were some singers who didn't like certain colors of pianos, I understand.
Woo! Sarah would not stand or lean against a piano that was all white.
Why was that?
She felt it had to have been painted. It was just not right. It just didn't look right. She felt she didn't look right in front of it. I think she had some kind of little negative thought of sitting with a, you know, a white piano sitting up. It looked like it was in the movies, maybe. Yeah, yeah. And she just didn't like the impression.
But then Natalie Cole had her preference for pianos, and she even used to take one on the road with her, right?
Yes. Yeah, she carried her own piano. She always had the best piano players, too. Boy, that Alan Broadbent, that George Gaffney, there was the Terry Trotter. They were all of them were always the best. But she had her own piano, and that was what was great, because each of us musicians had her own instrument. And when you get to travel like that, like it used to be, it was a great feeling. Great feeling making the music and doing a show.
And you went all around the world with Natalie Cole for years and years, right?
Yes. I did the 10 years with her when she did the Unforgettable Tour, right up until she wanted to switch back over to her pink Cadillac. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I read, you know, going back for a moment to Basie, that in the 60s, you actually did a tour with a childhood hero of mine, Georgie Fame.
I love Georgie Fame.
So do I.
Yeah, man, Georgie. And this guy was so hot. He was like an Elvis Presley, you know.
When I was a teenager in high school, I would go to a club in London and see him with his band, the Blue Flames, and he was an R&B singer in those days. Today he's singing jazz, and he sounds great. When I saw in your book that you had actually toured with Georgie Fame and you know him, I was really impressed.
Oh, Yeah, Mitchell. Oh, I got to meet you now. I mean, I've never seen that many girls around any of my type gigs that I've done. Well, one other one, Robbie Williams.
Is that right? Robbie Williams, huh?
Yeah, out of England.
Another British guy.
Another British guy, man, and he was real popular, and he did a big band album. I forget the name of it, but something about When You're Swinging. It was number one in Britain there for a minute.
And the girls liked him.
Oh, yeah. Georgie Fame and I, we went to the pub together.
I love that song that he does, Moody's Mood for Love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man.
When I grew up, Annie Ross was my next-door neighbor, so I had that jazz thing going.
Wow, she's another one of my favorites. I went over to her house when I was over there with Sarah Vaughan all the time.
She's lovely, isn't she?
Oh, absolutely. And before that, when she was with Hendrix, Lambert, and Hendrix, Ross, they did a couple of gigs with the Basie Band, you know. Yeah, and I can't remember where with the different places. I know one of them was in Chicago at the Opera House because, man, backstage was Joe Jones and Sonny Payne and, my drummer, he was from Chicago, played with Louis Armstrong. Anyway, I'll never forget it, man. They were singing, and they sang so fast and with those words. There's somebody standing back on stage saying, "Damn, I can't even hear that fast." Everybody cracked up because, boy, they were the first ones to put those words in there, weren't they? Like that?
They sure were.
But yeah, I love Nanny Willis. Absolutely, hung out with her some of her at her place.
That's great to hear. You say that your 10 years playing with Sarah Vaughan was a lot of fun. Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, there's something about when you're on a job that you like. Boy, when we go to work, I couldn't tell you if it was an hour show or if it was a 3-hour show because it was that enjoyable and you're thinking about it and you're painting a picture, you know? And then, you don't put a time limit on when you're trying to paint a picture. So I think the music should be something like that, too.
And she was a nice person to work with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She'd give you the shirt off her back, but then she might ask for the dollar bill that was in the pocket. Yeah.
Hi, this is Mitchell Field again. I'm having so much fun listening to Harold Jones. This guy's just great. I'm going to save a little bit more of the interview with him and run it next week as part 3. So I hope you've enjoyed today's show, and please listen in again next week for part 3 of Harold Jones. Well, thanks for joining me today on The Field Trip. I welcome your views and comments on the show, as well as your suggestions for future guests. My email address is mitchellfield@radiosausalito.org. The theme music you hear behind me is the tune Superjet with the fabulous Marin sax man, Noel Jukes, up front. It's from the recording The Noel Jukes Quartet, featuring Matt Clark. Please remember that The Field Trip can be heard Wednesdays at the top of every hour at 1610 on your AM radio dial in Southern Marin, countywide on Wednesdays at noon on Comcast Cable Channel 26, on your computer at radiosausalito.org, or 24 hours a day as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. If you liked today's show, please tell your friends. If you didn't, well, please tell your enemies. So till next time, this is Mitchell Field saying goodbye, good luck, and see you next week. Well, thanks for joining me today on The Field Trip. I welcome your views and comments on the show, as well as your suggestions for future guests. My email address is mitchellfield@radiosausalito.org. The theme music you hear behind me is the tune Superjet with the fabulous Marin sax man, Noel Jukes, up front. It's from the recording The Noel Jukes Quartet, featuring Matt Clark. Please remember that The Field Trip can be heard Wednesdays at the top of every hour at 1610 on your AM radio dial in Southern Marin, countywide on Wednesdays at noon on Comcast Cable Channel 26, on your computer at radiosausalito.org, or 24 hours a day as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. If you liked today's show, please tell your friends. If you didn't, well, please tell your enemies. So till next time, this is Mitchell Field saying goodbye, Good luck, and see you next week.
We hope you enjoyed the preceding Radio Sausalito presentation. You'll find more great jazz programming and podcasts updated every week online at radiosausalito.org.